crowds, but if they weren't gone come Monday morning, he would move them along. But there had been no need. Come Monday morning, the farm field where the gypsies had camped was empty except for wheel ruts, empty beer and soda cans. The gypsies apparently had no interest in Connecticut's new bottle and can deposit law. The blackened remains of several small cook fires, and three or four blankets so lousy that the deputy chalker sent out to investigate would only poke at them with a stick, a long stick. Sometime between sundown and sunup, the gypsies had left the field, left Raintree, left Patchen County, had, chalker told his old poker buddy Kerry Rossington, left the planet as far as he either knew or cared, and good riddance. On Sunday afternoon, the old gypsy man had touched Carrie's face. On Sunday night, they had left. On Monday morning, Kerry had gone to Chalker to lodge a complaint. Just what the legal basis of the complaint might have been, Leader Rossington didn't know. On Tuesday morning, the trouble had begun. After his shower, Kerry had come downstairs to the breakfast nook, wearing only his bathrobe, and had said, "Look at this." This turned out to be a patch of roughened skin, just a little above his solar plexus. The skin was a shade lighter than the surrounding flesh, which was an attractive coffee-with-cream shade. Golf, tennis, swimming, and a UV sun lamp in the winter kept his tan unvarying. The rough patch looked yellowish to her, the way the calluses on the heels of her feet sometimes got in very dry weather. She had touched it, her voice faltered momentarily here, and then drawn her finger away quickly. The texture was rough, almost pebbly, and surprisingly hard. Armored. That was the word that had risen unbidden in her mind. "You don't think that damn gypsy gave me something, do you?" Carrie asked worriedly. "Ringworm or impetigo or some damn thing like that?" "He touched your face, not your chest, dear," Lita had replied. "Now, get dressed quick as you can. We've got brioche. Wear the dark grease suit with the red tie and dress up Tuesday for me, will you? What a love you are." Two nights later, he had called her into the bathroom, his voice so like a scream that she had come on the run. All our worst revelations come in the bathroom, Billy thought. Carrie was standing with his shirt off, his razor humming, forgotten in one hand, his wide eyes staring into the mirror. The patch of hard yellowish skin had spread. It had become a blotch, a vaguely tree-like shape that spread upward to the area between his nipples and downward, widening, toward his belly button. This changed flesh was raised above the normal flesh of his belly and stomach by almost an eighth of an inch, and she saw there were deep cracks running through it. Several of them looked deep enough to slip the edge of a dime into. For the first time, she thought he was beginning to look, well, scaly, and felt her gorge rise. "What is it?" he nearly screamed at her. "Lita, what is it?" "I don't know," she said, forcing her voice to remain calm. "But you've got to see Michael Houston. That much is clear. Tomorrow, Carrie." "No, not tomorrow," he said, still staring at himself in the mirror, staring at the raised, arrowhead-shaped hump of harsh yellow flesh. "It may be better tomorrow. Day after tomorrow, if it isn't better, but not tomorrow. Carrie, hand me that Nivea cream, Lita." She did, and stood there a moment longer. But the sight of him smearing the white goo over that hard yellow flesh, listening to the pads of his fingers rasp over it, that was more than she could stand, and she fled back to her room. That was the first time, she told Halleck, that she had been consciously glad for the twin beds, consciously glad he wouldn't be able to turn over in his sleep and touch her. She had lain wakeful for hours, she said, hearing the soft rasp, rasp of his fingers moving back and forth across that alien flesh. He told her the following night that it was better. The night after that, he claimed it was better still. She supposed she should have seen the lie in his eyes, and that he was lying to himself more than he was to her. Even in his extremity, Carrie had remained the same selfish son of a bitch she supposed he had always been. But it hadn't all been Carrie's doing, she added sharply, still not turning back from the bar, where she was now fiddling aimlessly with the glasses. She had developed her own brand of highly specialized selfishness over the years. She had wanted, needed the illusion almost as much as he had. On the third night, he had walked into the bedroom wearing only his pajama pants. His eyes were soft and hurt, stunned. She had been rereading a Dorothy Sayers mystery. They were, for always and ever, her favorites. And it dropped from her fingers as she saw him. She would have screamed, she told Billy, but it seemed to her that all her breath was gone. And Billy had time to reflect that no human feeling was truly unique, although one might like to think so. Carrie Rossington had apparently gone through the same period of self-delusion followed by shattering self-awakening that Billy had gone through himself. Lita had seen that the hard yellow skin, the scales, there was no longer any way to think of them as anything else, now covered most of Carrie's chest